Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Health Matters. My name is Sitheni Nhleha, and yes, we are in October, and we are celebrating winners, heroes and heroines who have fought and won the battle against breast cancer. And this is Pinktober and Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and also we're going to be looking at mental wellness health in the month of October. So please join us tonight as we speak to a hero who has fought and won the battle against cancer and is now an advocate. And joining me tonight in the studio is Lucia, and let's dive right in. And just introduce yourself.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
A good hello to your listeners. My name is Lucia Bopoto, and I am a breast cancer survivor. I am also an advocate for early detection and a patient advocate as well. Should I go deeper?
Yeah, well that would then bring me like early detection, especially with your journey and the age that you were told you have breast cancer. How was that for you?
Oh, I think it was, I don't know, I always describe it as a sudden rush of emptiness that just, it from my heart right up to my toes. I couldn't feel anything. I remember I cried, but I'm an escapist, so I push things away all the time. I was like, okay, what's next after this? What's next? But yeah, it was a rush of emptiness.
Okay, a rush of emptiness, and still on that issue of your age, how old were you when you finally?
I was 35. I think I just turned 35 a month prior to finding out that I have breast cancer.
And what had urged you to actually go for the checkup?
I was lying at home, and I realized it's been about 6, 7, 8 months since I'd done my checkup. So I was like, okay, let me just do a self-check. And then I checked, and then I felt like a small lump. But when I felt the small lump, I was like, it can't be, can it? So I ignored it for a bit. And then I checked, I think 3 weeks or a month later, and then it felt like the lumps had grown, and now there were 2 lumps. So I panicked, and then that's what urged me to go to my doctor and get it checked out.
Also, like the first instinct with the first lump was, no, it can't be you. Just like, I'm too young as well.
Yeah, I think it's also a me thing that I always feel like I'm being dramatic. So I felt like, okay, I want cancer, me, it can't be. I'm just being dramatic. Let me see how it plays out.
Okay, and when you say you felt like you were being dramatic and all, and then now actually the journey of going to the doctor after discovering the second lump, how was it for you actually going there? You didn't even have doubt before that.
Yeah, even going, I was still doubtful. So I went to a regular GP, and he didn't have any screening material, so he had to do the self-check himself. And he didn't find anything, and I was like, ooh, phew. But he was like, you know your body better, so go get the scans no matter what happens. I wasn't a medical aide. He had to ask the scanning place to give me a discount just to make sure that I go. So I went, I got the scans done, and yeah, one of the lumps was suspicious, and they urged me to go for a mammogram and further tests.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess for me, the biggest takeaway always is support. How was it for you, like, they're now needing to disclose to your family and friends?
I think at first I was scared because my dad also had breast cancer. So I knew that my parents would panic. Mm-hmm. And I had alerted them that I'm going through all these tests, these series of tests. But then when the time came to actually disclose them, I think I just sent my mom a message, and I sent 2 other people a message. And then I decided to just put it out on Facebook so that I wouldn't have to text people and be like, hi, this happened. Yeah. Yeah. So I just put it out on Instagram, and I let social media do its thing. Because I also felt like it would be begging for attention to text someone and say, hi, I've got cancer. And then they'll be so shaken. And yeah, so I didn't want that whole drama.
Okay. So from the first time that you actually went through your chemo or medication, or the treatments, how was it like? What kept you going?
Whew, that's a difficult one. Okay, can I answer this in two ways?
Okay.
When I first got diagnosed, I had like 5 days to prep myself and be like, I can do this. And then I went for treatment. And then I realized, this is not as easy as I thought. And then, you know, you still think, okay, if my dad could do this, and then you pray. I remember I'll just play the last song that I'd heard at church. I'd play it on YouTube on repeat, like afterwards. And then until the third cycle, I was like, I freaked out. I was like, I'm not doing this. I went to my oncologist's office. I was like, I'm done. And she was like, okay, take some time off, relax, go talk to someone, and then come back. So I took that time off. I prayed. I spoke to a therapist. And then when I came back, you know, I was now ready to go back again. So I was like, okay, let me just do this and get this over and done with.
Okay. I guess one of the important things that we need to ascertain as well, with early detection, then you went, you got tested, and what stage were you on?
I was on stage 2. It was stage 2 when they found it. So yeah, it was, but I always ask myself, if I hadn't waited a bit, maybe it could have been stage 1. So the treatment could have not, maybe wouldn't have been as intense as it was, probably. Yeah.
So in your advocacy journey, what is your biggest push?
Self-check. My problem with most of the material that's out there is that they advocate for women to start getting mammograms when they are 40. But we've seen a trend of women below 40 getting cancer. More and more people are getting cancer. And when you're below 40 and you haven't breastfed, the mammogram won't show anything. In my case, the mammogram was perfect. It showed nothing at all. Sorry, I'm going to have to use my fan.
Okay.
Those hot flashes. Mm-hmm. So the mammogram was perfect when I went for a check,
mm-hmm,
because I was below 40 and I hadn't breastfed. But then the only way that we can get ahead of this is if we check ourselves. And once you start checking yourselves, you get to know your breasts, and then you know what they feel like. If you feel anything foreign, then you know to take action.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you've told your parents, how did they take it and how was the journey for you with them?
I was in another country, so my dad freaked out, but my mom was like the buffer. Mm-hmm. I think also he kind of had guilt that maybe I passed this on. And my mom actually flew into Namibia. She came for about 2 therapy sessions, and then she came back, and then she came back here. They were quite supportive, you know, checking in as often as they could. My brothers, my siblings as well, were a big support system.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad, I realized that when I came back last year, because after treatment, I decided to come home. He still had that. You could tell even in his interaction, he had that fear that, and my dad expressed his fear in a very weird way. So his fear was overly trying to overcompensate, you know, but I had to also take a step back and realize that, no, this is his fear playing out for my life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's how it went with them.
Okay. Then maybe given your journey that you've gone through and all, what would you actually say to the younger you? But like, what has been your biggest takeaway from the whole journey in total and even up to today?
I think human beings are so resilient.
Mm-hmm.
With God, I think there's probably nothing that you can't pass over. As long as you center God around it, you can, because I've gone through cancer. Younger me would have thought that there's no way I could go through cancer and come out at the end. And now I've realized that you can do it. So you can do almost anything. Human beings are incredibly resilient. And yeah, you can come out at the end of anything.
Okay. Lucia, one other thing that maybe, you know, sometimes people don't understand, as we will continuously talk about self-check,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, going even to the doctors, taking up, because I know during October, most people, there will be free health checks on,
yeah,
breast cancer and all. So people should actually take those up.
Yeah.
And what campaigns are you actually pushing? I know you're going to have your inaugural campaign and you're going to have it in Bulawayo. Tell
yes.
us more about that.
All right. So I am doing an awareness tour, Zimbabwe, around Zimbabwe. And like I said, my aim is women under 40, because my aim is let's empower each other to do these self-checks. You can do them at home every month if possible. When you're doing your maintenance day, 3 days after your cycle, you try and check. So yeah, my inaugural event will be in Bulawayo. We are having an event. It's an afternoon of art, poetry, dance, performances, and also conversation. We're going to have like a panel to discuss like what exactly is it that cancer is, discuss my journey, give people hope, and then also hear from a medical standpoint what younger women can do, the proactive things that they can do with, in terms of lifestyle as well, to avoid.
Okay. So just speaking about in terms of lifestyle, what to avoid, what is it that the young girls out there should know? Like, what should they avoid? What lifestyle should they actually be keeping?
Okay, so I think the first thing would be, we can never rule out the fact that all these things will work. It's just increasing the chances of not being diagnosed. But exercise is one thing. Constantly exercise. They say 30 minutes a day of good exercise. Reducing alcohol. I know this one is contentious. Every time a study comes out, Instagram is on flames because everyone who has cancer feels blamed that, are you saying I got cancer because of alcohol? But alcohol reduction, reducing the amount of alcohol that you drink, avoiding smoking, that's also something. And then also being cautious about what you eat. These days we eat a lot of fast food, we eat a lot of takeaway and stuff like that. Let's try and have a more plant-based diet that can at least reduce your chances. It won't keep you in the clear 100%, but it reduces your chances, and anything to reduce your chances is always a good thing.
Okay. Yeah. And in choosing your on your tour, in choosing art, why would you choose art of all things to do?
I was trying to find spaces where it's really spoken about. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen more cancer ads or more warnings on cancer than when I was diagnosed. And I was like, it's a little too late now. Now I'm getting 5-6 pamphlets of early detection saves lives. And I'm like, I know that. So I'm trying to integrate into spaces where it's not often spoken about and like morph the conversation in a way that, you know, people who understand art would also get the message across. So it's more of morphing. If you, I'm also trying to get into pop culture spaces, morphing the message to make it fit into the space that I'm in an effort to get people to pay attention.
Okay. This is Health Matters, a special edition, as we are in October, Breast Awareness, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we want to be bringing about the positive and giving hope, you know, and being a sister's keeper, being a brother's keeper. Because, yes, cancer, breast cancer is not only affecting women, as you know, it also does affect men. So please join us and we'll be right back. Welcome back. My name is Sitieni, and today I'm with beautiful Lucia, who's a breast cancer survivor. And please note, in October, we have it's a month that's dedicated to Emotional Wellness Month, highlighting the importance of managing stress and making positive changes for mental and emotional health. Mm-hmm. And key health observances include Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And it's also awareness days for domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And going back to our topic for today, which is breast cancer awareness and all. And I'm sure, Lucia, being married and all, how did this news affect you or actually impact you?
My first thing was, because I don't have kids, I struggle a bit with fertility issues, infertility. So my first thing was, is this it? And then the next thing was, if I'm going to get surgery, then how is that going to play out? I think I feared more about his reaction towards like everything that was going to happen.
Okay.
But yeah, that was my first reaction.
And walking the journey with your partner, how has it been, and what lessons did you learn from it?
I think the first thing is that I was blessed in the sense that where I went for treatment, he knew someone there. So when the lady saw us, she was like, what's happening? And then we informed her, and then she took her aside and took her to one of the oncologists, very elderly woman, who gave him a rundown of everything that was about to happen. So I didn't even know what was going to happen to me, but he knew and he was told, expect this, expect that. So I think they kind of equipped him with that knowledge. So as things panned out, he was like, oh yeah, they said this would happen and I should do this. But he's been incredibly supportive. It's been a tough journey for him as well. I remember when I was diagnosed, he took it so hard. I had to pretend like I'm strong because you could tell that he wasn't doing so okay. He had to talk to, but you know, men also don't like talking about these things. So I had to encourage him to also find someone to talk about. Otherwise, that he's been every single appointment that I had, every single radiation session that I had to go to, he was there with me along the way.
Okay. And then, like, speaking to other couples out there, maybe who've just gotten the news, and or what would you actually encourage them? How did both of you, like, there's you, you're going through your emotions, he's going through his emotions, but what made you really actually manage to maneuver this together?
So I think I need to be transparent and say there was a time when there was when there was no maneuvering. There was a time when it was incredibly hard. Soon after treatment, my emotions were high, and I had induced menopause, and I was tired, and I wasn't okay. But I failed to realize that he was also going through the same thing, that he had also been through this with me. So he was also probably tired, and he doesn't talk a lot when he's tired. I want to scream when I'm feeling something. So it was, there were weeks that things were quite shaky. But I then chose to go to therapy. I was like, this can't be healthy for me. So I went to therapy. I started learning how to regulate my emotions. Another lady told me about a certain prayer group. I joined that, and, you know, things started getting easier for him as well. Once I regulated my emotions, then, you know, I could have a conversation with him. He could talk to me, because it had reached a point where he was like, I don't know what to say to you, because anything I say, you're going to blow out of proportion.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So looking at that, what would you say? I mean, there are common mistakes for maybe people who've never walked the journey, you know. What is it that maybe family or friends did that actually you would encourage other people not to do?
Okay, so the first thing, it's very different for each journey. But my first thing was, I had this friend in an effort to not, I think she doesn't want you to be docile or to feel pity for yourself. So every day she'd ask me, what are you up to today? What are you up to? And it's such an innocent question, but it would hammer on. So I'm useless. I'm not doing anything. And then there's also understanding the emotions that come with treatment. And then there's also the last thing is that once you're done with treatment, it's not over. It takes you a good two and a half years, maybe, if you're lucky, to get back to being yourself. So a lot of people withdraw their support. It wasn't exactly the same in my case, but a lot of people withdraw their support once you're done with treatment because they think you're good to go. So yeah, just be patient. Now you're getting back to being yourself. Your body is trying to come back to being your body again. It can't be your old body, but you're trying to get back to normal. So it's going to take time for people once they're done with treatment.
Okay. And okay, I know I've asked what kept you going, but like, is there a certain habit or hobby that you actually helped you go through the journey of cancer?
I think the one thing that I did was it takes 21 days for chemo to wear off your body. So once I started feeling like now I'm good to go, every Sunday before my chemotherapy session, I'd go out, whether it's for lunch with a friend, whether it's somewhere to sit alone. But I used that time to kind of regroup myself and ready myself for the next treatment. So I did try and do different things every Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think on my 36th birthday, I went skydiving against the doctor's recommendations. But, you know, he gave me a break for 2 weeks and I was like, nazo, went skydiving. Yeah, came back with a terrible burn, but at least I enjoyed myself.
it didn't stop you from living.
I tried to live as best as I could.
Okay, so yeah. There's somebody who actually believes they are on cancer is like a do or die, like they are done.
Mm.
What would you say to that person today?
You're not done. It's never over until it's actually over. As long as you're still alive, just try to find the hope in tomorrow. Sometimes it's incredibly hard because it's such a process, but just try to find hope and rest when you need to. It's such an important thing that when your body tells you to rest, rest. But as soon as you're feeling like you're okay to go out again, go out. see people, go and socialize with people. I had no eyebrows, no eyelashes, no hair, but I was out there. I'm like, how was I this brave when I look at my pictures? But I was brave enough to go out there. So try and be brave as well. It's hard, but you can do it.
So did you have to search for that braveness, or it just came?
On some days I had to search for it. On some days it came with support from friends. My husband will tell a certain two people that today she's not doing okay, and then they'll have to come talk to me, just talk general stories, laugh, and then when they leave I'm feeling better. So sometimes it just comes, you wonder how it comes. At other times you search for it, and then at other times it comes from your support.
And someone was once saying that you actually don't appreciate always being asked, so how are you feeling today? How are you feeling today?
Yeah, because how do you want me? What do you want me to say? At the end of the day, you're just going to say, I'm fine. Because you have to be fine. So sometimes it's not about asking, just maybe even starting a conversation without, how are you feeling today? Just, have you seen the weather? Maybe not as petty as the weather, but starting a conversation without asking someone how they're feeling, because it tends to kind of overwhelm them. Should I be better now? Am I recovering too slowly? Am I a burden to people? Yeah.
Oh, so all those questions do come through and all.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in the spirit of being positive, and one thing I'm appreciating about is that you've taken this journey and are actually, you know, advocating for a better mindset and all. And what would you say maybe to other survivors out there?
Firstly, wow, you are so strong. I admire every single survivor. It's nothing but strength that got you as far as you've gotten. And I know that there are hard days, days that you can't tell a lot of people about. I know I usually have chemo brain, and with menopause, brain fog, I forget so much. And people are like, how can you be so forgetful? But I have to remind myself that it's my journey. So remind yourself that it's your journey as well. Take it each day as it comes. You've fought so far, and there's still so much life to be lived. So let's be brave.
Okay, let's be brave. That's quite an amazing statement. Are we going to be dancing in Bulawayo?
Oh, we're going to be dancing. We're going to be having conscious rap. We're going to be having so much fun. Just have to be there to experience it.
And then after Bulawayo, where would the journey be going?
The next stop is MSU, Midland State University. So Bulawayo is on the 7th, MSU is on the 9th. And yeah, from there, I think we'll be playing it by ear. I'll be doing a few talks here in Harare and podcast appearances, as well as on my socials. I'll be getting interviews with doctors, that's dentists, optometrists, just to find out that further than actual cancer, what happens to your teeth, what happens to your eyes. I believe that could help someone who's going through treatment.
Oh, that's quite incredible. And just before we close off, what are your parting words, Lucia?
First of all, be in Bulawayo at Allianz on the 7th. If you're in Bulawayo, you don't want to miss this. And secondly, let's have conversations about cancer. I know it's a scary thing, but treatment and tech has modernized everything. So there's a fighting chance. Keep checking yourselves. If you catch it early, you have more options when it comes to treatment.
Okay, this has been Health Matters. My name is Siteni Leah Umandazi. And Breast Cancer Awareness Month, a significant national or international observance focused on the education and prevention of breast cancer. And as Lucia said, it's important to have early detection. It's never too late. And being diagnosed with cancer is not a death sentence, and you can still be positive, choose to leave. And your parting words?
Stay positive, guys. Breast cancer is not a death sentence. Like, you can fight this thing. Make sure that you tell more people about breast cancer so that we all stand a fighting chance.
Okay, that's great. And since we're in October, please remember to practice self-care, connect with others, volunteer, utilize resources, seek support when you need it. It's been a great episode. I pray that it changes somebody and it impacts somebody's life. Have a good night and join us again next week.